Live from the NBC News radio broadcasting studios of KCAA 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful sunny California. And it was sunny today, man. A little bit of rain yesterday. And we're also in parallel to Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And you can find them at turfsupradio.com. So thanks for tuning in to The Water Zone this afternoon. I'm Rob Starr along with Mr. Chris Davey. Chris, hello.
Good afternoon, or good evening. Yeah, it's after 6.
Good evening. Check your watch.
Yeah, check the time. So, yeah, a little bit of rain this week, and it was a cold storm, so there was snow down to, what, 5,000, 6,000 feet in the local mountains. That was pretty cool. 10 inches in some of the resort levels.
Yep.
So good for the ski industry.
They're going to be very happy. It's good for the water.
Good for the water, yep.
So that's a good thing. Yep. So we got a lot of things going tonight. We have some two great guests, and we also have our wonderful Miss Chris Austin coming on first. A couple things that are happening we want to talk about. Chris, you want to go first on Davey first?
Yeah, so let's talk about the IA show, which is coming up the week of December 2nd, right?
Two weeks?
That's the first thing, yeah, just a couple of weeks from now that's coming up. It'll be going right on. So if you're a contractor, if you're a distributor, if you're in the industry in any way and you want a firsthand look at the very latest in irrigation technologies, all the products, all the services that the market has to offer, then you need to go to the 2019 Irrigation Show and Education Conference. This week, the annual event held December 2nd through the 6th in Las Vegas. We'll be co-located this year, right, Rob?
Yes.
It's going to be with the National Groundwater Association and the American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association. About 10,000 attendees. So come and join them. Latest industry innovations firsthand from over 600 or 700 exhibitors there. There's also a lot of training going on, so if you're looking to grow your knowledge and become more comprehensive, there are great education programs going on there, including industry insights and just covering the latest industry trends, a chance to network, connect with other irrigation professionals, the list goes on. So register if you can, attend the irrigation show in Las Vegas.
And we're going to be broadcasting during the show
at
the Toro booth. And then on Thursday night, we're broadcasting again live, but that will be in a special room there. And we have a gentleman named Dov Avital, who's a vice president of a company called Metzerplas, and they're from Israel. And they're going to come and talk about water issues that are happening overseas and what products they do and how it's very important.
That will be an insightful interview.
It'll be great.
I guarantee it.
Also, as an update to the Extreme Water Makeover, we announced that Ms. Sherry Gully of Irvine had won the contest.
Congratulations to Sherry.
And NBC is coming out to start doing a documentary as we progress in the conversion of her front yard to make it a water-efficient system. So that'll start on Monday after the – actually, it's the 2nd.
Monday the 2nd.
So we'll be doing that. So we'd like to now bring Miss Chris Austin, who is the purveyor of the world's famous Maven's Notebook. Everything you want to know about water, she's the lady to go to. Right, Chris?
Yeah,
there she is.
We thought we
welcome,
lost you.
Chris. Haven't heard your voice for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I know. But, hey, even though you didn't send me the email today, Rob, hey, my iPhone never fails to remind me.
Oh,
Can't tell you how many times the alarm goes off. I go, oh, yeah, I got to do the radio show tonight.
Well, that's the bad news. And I'll have to apologize for Rob. I'll make sure that he gets his comeuppance when...
I'm very sorry. I won't do it again.
Bottom line is my iPhone alarm is more reliable than Rob. But that's okay.
Oh, you've been talking to my wife, huh?
Well, we got about 6 minutes, actually, Chris, because we got about a 6:15 cutoff, I think.
Okay, hey, no problem.
Yep.
You know, it's been a busy day in water. Today, the state released its version of the operating plan for the state water project for their Delta operations, which is the state version of how they're going to operate their part of the state water project in the Delta, which has some conflicts with how the feds have decided they're going to operate their projects in the Delta. And you have to kind of keep in mind that the federal projects have their own pumps, and the state water project has its own pumps, and they are located a stone's throw from each other in the Delta, and they use the same channel. So if the feds say that they're going to particular channel, and the state says they will only allow 2,000 CFS down that channel, it's a problem.
So would you say that that report's either classified as propaganda, fiction, or fact?
You know, it's really hard to say at this point in time. You know, the federal government has its own look at how these things should run, and the state has their own look. And right now, they are in conflict. And I haven't really had a chance to dig into what the state released in their biological opinions tonight. But there's a lot of activity going on. And probably the most significant thing is that the Newsom administration has decided or declared that they will be filing a lawsuit against the federal government over these biological opinions and the operation of these two water projects in the Delta.
Do you know how many lawsuits California's filed against the federal government?
A lot.
In the last 3 years. Unbelievable.
A lot. But you know, the issue of federal versus state rights is actually a big one.
Yes.
And what we're really wrangling over in the Delta here is, can the state set the standards for, you know, what's going to happen in the Delta, or can the feds set the standards? It's either got to be one or the other, because they're not on the same page. So does federal, you know, water operations trump whatever the, you know, not trying to use that word, you know, Trump the president, but, you know, do they override whatever the state wants to do? And in the past, the federal government has sort of, through lawsuits and other means, has come to usually defer to the state to decide these things.
Right.
And now we have a federal conflict and a state conflict, and it's going to be a very interesting battle over who's going to win.
Well, you know,
the federal government have a right to come into the Delta and say, we're going to operate the Delta in this way? Or does the state have the right to say, this is our waterways and we want it to run like this?
You know, it's like the topic I've heard for the last 5 years, whose water is it really?
Yeah, yeah. And in general, you know, it was interesting. Republicans have generally been, you know, very favorable to states' rights. But in this case, they're kind of running, you know, counter to that. So we'll see how it all shakes out. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. The state has said they're going to file a lawsuit against the government, the federal government, and the Bureau of Reclamation basically responded today and said, bring it on, we're ready. And so we'll see how this is all going to battle out. I mean, there are so many battles right now between the federal and the state, you know, California, the state of California, over all these issues. It's going to be really interesting to see how it works out.
Interesting. I had seen an article the other day how there's an uptick in applications to law school. So seriously,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, you chuckle. It was real.
Yeah. I mean, that's getting to be, you know, years ago people were joking about being an environmental attorney, but I'll tell you, it's really the thing to be these days.
Yeah, and well, we'll see how it works out.
Yep.
We're all sitting here waiting to see, you know, who's going to do what. We were all sort of waiting to see what the Newsom administration was going to, how they were going to respond to the federal, you know, the federal guidelines for operation of their project. And well, now we don't. They don't match. Hey, no surprise there. And so now we're going to have some lawsuits. So we'll see how it all works out.
Any weather news this week, Chris? I mean, are you home? Did you get a good soaking where you're at?
We got some soaking up here in Santa Clarita, the northern tip of L.A. County, but nothing really really amazing. But I know that there was some, you know, good rain. It was mostly located in the south. Not much happened up north. They had a little bit of chance for some snow, and they did get some snow in the higher elevations, but they haven't received enough rain yet to really reduce the fire risk. So we'll see how it all goes.
Well,
you know, we've had Octobers and Novembers that have had precipitation that has been just great and continues into December, and then in January it stops and it dries up and there's nothing more for the rest of the year. So, you know, a lot of people are making speculation, you know, where it's been dry, it's going to be a drought year, and they may be right or they may be wrong. Unfortunately, you know, we really can't tell until we get to January and we see what Mother Nature brings us.
Right, not time to count your chickens yet.
Yeah. No, and you can't base a wet fall or a dry fall on anything that's going to, you know, forecast for the upcoming winter, because you just don't know. It can be anything. Yeah.
Well, this recent storm was a southern influence storm, right, even though it had a cold element to it. So even the eastern Sierras didn't get much rain or snow out of this one. So.
Although I guess, you know, they got 6 inches of snow up in Lake Tahoe.
Right.
And I think they got more up in Mammoth and, you know, and in the Southern California mountains, because it was more southerly influenced. But there was also something coming in from the north that kind of got diverted and didn't really, you know, help out Northern California much. So they still remain pretty dry.
Wow. Hey, I'd be remiss to ask you a personal thing here, but I know you were located kind of close to that shooting. Was anything affected by you guys up that way?
Located close to the what?
The shooting that they had.
Saugus.
In Saugus.
Oh my word! That was right over. All I can say is I'm glad my kids aren't in high school anymore.
Good.
But it's really, really sad that I should think that.
Okay, I had to ask us. We worry about you. You're one of our prime guests here, and every weekend I forgot to send you an email to ask you about that. I was worried about it, so I'm glad you're.
Yeah, I mean it's just a tragedy, and I wish that there was something that someone could figure out how to do to stop kids shooting people, you know, shooting their fellow students in high school.
Yeah.
I felt for those parents. I cried for those parents. I can't imagine what it must be like to be waiting to see if your kid gets off the bus or if you're the last parent standing there.
And even for the parents of the kid who did it, I mean, that's got to be horrendous to them. I mean, you know, people will get angry at them and whatever. But anyway, I just want to make sure everybody's safe at your place, so that's good. Anything else interesting in water this week that happened? Anything incredible? Except for another lawsuit?
We've been all been awed by all the everything that went down today. That's been quite a day.
I think groundwater here in the future in California is getting a lot of notice, more and more, and that's going to be an important factor here, and how that's going to help California and everywhere else. But we need an infrastructure to make sure that happens. So,
yeah, groundwater. You know, we're starting to see the first of the plans come out that are due for January 31st, and these are in the most critically overdrafted basins. And you know, reviews are mixed so far. Some people say, you know, you haven't considered enough, and other basins seem to be kind of on track. I mean, it's tough. I mean, this groundwater management thing is just one of several things that California farmers are having to deal with.
Right. So. All right. Well, Chris, we appreciate you coming on today. Sorry, I forgot to send the email as usual. I figured, but you're better kept than I am.
But my iPhone alarm has you beat.
Good. I was just so swamped today, and so was Chris. I mean, it was just a horrendous day, and it's the first time I forgot to send you an email in all these years, so I apologize for that. So.
Hey, no problem. Like I said, I showed up anyway.
Yes, you did.
Like a bad penny. I keep jumping.
You're not a bad penny.
Not at all, Chris.
And anybody who wants to please go to mavensnotebook.com for every day. They give the latest information on what's happening in California water. But you can also be a contributor to that and get on a mailing list. And it's a great opportunity to be understanding of what's going on in at least this state.
Yep, absolutely.
Maybe some. someday you'll spread out across the country, but yep. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of work for you.
Yep. And Chris
I'm happy to stay in California. We're wacky enough here.
Okay.
And Chris, enjoy your holiday week next week, right? Remember, you don't have to call in next Thursday because it's Thanksgiving. We won't be broadcasting.
We'll play a replay. All right. Thanks a lot. We're going to go to a quick commercial here before we bring on our guests, second guests. And so stick around for the second half of the Water Zone with Rob and Chris. We'll be back momentarily.
Stay tuned, everyone.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
Time to take a water break and talk some water. Irrigation. Such a refreshing topic. As more and more markets face water restrictions, your customers may be hungry, or should I say thirsty, for water-saving products. For new installations, add options like drip irrigation, controllers that respond to weather data, pressure regulating heads, or heads with check valves. They all provide easy ways to differentiate your bids and win more jobs. Or for an extra stream of revenue, offer existing customers upgrades like high efficiency nozzles, rotary nozzles, or Wi-Fi based controllers. Because when you help your customers save water, you make a world of difference for the earth and your bottom line at the same time. We'll drink to that.
All right. Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone. Hope everybody's enjoying what's happening today. We got two great guests upcoming here. And Chris, I'll let you introduce the first one in no particular order, but.
Okay. So I'm gonna pick what the first one is then. I guess you're giving me that right? So, all right. So, guys, we have actually two excellent guests. I'm going to introduce the first one now. He's Mr. Drew Atwater. And Drew is the Director of Finance and Water Resources at the Moulton Niguel Water District. So in that role, I think Drew oversees the finance, water efficiency, water resource planning departments, and he has oversight of the integration of district analytical talent across the across several disciplines, actually, to create an interdisciplinary data science and quantitative team. And their task is to improve efficiencies throughout the agency. So before coming to the district, Mr. Atwater worked as a rate consultant for more than a dozen agencies, water agencies, building long-range financial plans and water budget studies and rate studies and drought rates and all along those lines. Drew is a regular author in the Journal of the American Water Resource Association on subjects ranging from integrated resource planning to drought rates and best practices in reserve policy design. Drew also has a Bachelor's of Arts in Physics from Reed College and a Master's of Environmental Science. It's focusing on environmental economics and policy, and that's from the University of California at Riverside, right here neighboring city to where we're broadcasting tonight. So first I'll welcome Drew to the show. Drew, are you there?
Yes, thank you so much.
Awesome to have you on. I appreciate it very much. If you just wait a second, Rob is going to introduce Lisa as well.
Yes, we got two geniuses on the show, Chris.
That's right. Says so here in the notes.
I hope we can keep up with them. I don't know. The next one is Lisa Modas. She's part of a multi-generation Modas water management team who travels the globe to education for members of the IWA and AWWA on water efficiency. And they're also the lead authors of the M52 Water Conservation Programs Manual published by the AWWA, which we are members of, and we support them a lot. So Lisa's a senior water resource engineer with experience preparing water resources planning studies for water suppliers across the country. And they do work, we're going to get into what her business does. Her passion is integrated water resources planning, and her specialty is in conservation, drought, and climate change planning. And she's currently on the board of directors for the California Urban Water Conservation Council and was formerly on staff as a technical advisor. She's done lots of papers for different organizations. Sure. She even writes books that these people adapt, and that's the rule books, the golden books. And she has a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in civil and environmental engineering from UC Davis. So we'd like to welcome Lisa and Drew to the Water Zone show this afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And you can all speak at once.
Thanks for having us.
So good evening, Lisa. Hey, just to start the conversations off with both of you, we always like to ask how, because we all, well, Chris came from this industry forever. I did not. How
started
did you
off on the business end of a shovel?
Oh, yeah, okay, that's right. You were doing that stuff. How did you get into this business, and how did you pick your career, Lisa? And we're going to ask the same thing from Drew.
I actually had my father in the industry from the 80s. He used to torture me with really bad shower heads back in the 80s. Yes, I have some great stories. He used to sneak in and, like, change out the shower head secretly on us and see if we liked it or not. And then I was just good math and science, so I ended up being an engineer. My sister actually got her engineering degree as well from UC Davis, and organically we ended up taking over the family business together. And I just naturally kind of decided, doing other water resource planning work, that I had too much, you know, history in water conservation and could really make the most difference there.
Oh, interesting. So is your dad William?
That's William, yeah, Bill. That's my
dad. Okay, just so I can get the family straight. And there's another, aside from your sister, isn't there another family member in that as well?
Yes. My brother-in-law does our software, and we have several software products, and then we have several other staff, too, that feel like family.
Well, that's excellent.
Give us a little history on your dad. We have a great timeline about your company that we saw from the data available for Maraus Water Management. And wow, what a timeline. So, you know, can you give us kind of like the 30,000 view of the history?
So our company started in 1995, founded by my dad as a sole proprietor, and my mom actually did his finances, and he's teamed and consulted for years. And then in 2000, 2003, I worked with him, and then Michelle joined in 2004, and I went to work for another engineering firm, so back and forth, but he still actually collaborates with us. We were just awarded a project last week in Australia with their drought coming back up, and so we took over the business in 2013, but he still consults with our team. He's still active in the family business.
Oh, that's cool. And Drew, how did you get started? What made you choose the career path you're in?
So it's a funny coincidence, but actually I have a family connection to the water industry as well. My father was one of the pioneers in developing water recycling, and at the time built one of the largest water recycling plants in the planet in Central and West Basin Municipal Water District back in the 1990s. And so he's a big inspiration in getting into water, and always saw that natural resources one of the biggest issues we'll face in the 21st century, and water is centered to a lot of natural resources. So really just that's been my inspiration to get into it.
What is your current role, Drew? I mean, you know, in the bio that I had a chance to read, gave a little bit about it, but can you give us a little bit more background about your current position and your role?
Absolutely. So I work across departments, really, really trying to find ways to help our organization innovate. I oversee both kind of the rate setting process to help inform our board of directors in making decisions on adjusting our rates, but also in designing water efficiency programs to help incentivize our customers to be efficient. And it's kind of, it's a unique situation to have both of those in my wheelhouse, but with actions that customers take to be efficient impacting water sales, impacting our finances, it's really proven to be a huge success for our agency, and coupling those two to help in our planning to ensure that as customers change their water usage and behavior, that that we are financially whole. And actually, in the last drought from 2012 to 2016, we actually had no negative impacts and thrived, and were commonly referred to as the agency that thrived during the drought because of that prudent planning approved by our board to ensure that as customers change their water usage behavior, that we're still ensuring that we have the finances to support investments in our infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, since both you and Lisa came from a background with families in the water business, you two both understood water issues from when you were very young. But what doesn't the average person know about water? Because that's, you know, I think in the last 5 years, or actually since the last drought, previous drought we had, I think the water agencies did a great job in promoting education and things about water to help people. But in your both of your opinions, what doesn't the average person know about water? Either one, you can both take that, and Lisa, if you want to go first.
Sure. I think the average customer probably doesn't know that 2/3 of our water use, or certainly more than half in each community, each water service area, is using water in our homes. In our apartments, our residences, we are really the managers of the water at our water tap. So, in frequently, like, more than about a third of our water use is indoors, 2/3 is outdoors. That's in the Central Valley, I'm in Sacramento. Drew in Southern California, it's about the same. You know, when you go up into the North Coast, you'll see it flip. About 2/3 or more of water is actually indoors and less water used outdoors just because of the climate difference. And, you know, similarly elsewhere in the country, right, it's just really climate dependent how much water we use outside. And we often find now with these more innovation in smart metering that and leak alerts, continuously running meters, about 15-20% of the meters are actually leaking. And a lot of the utilities are starting to move into giving leak alerts, emails, text messages, and things that people are aware of that and can, you know, tackle. Finding the leaks are often silent toilet flappers and irrigation systems being the two most likely.
Mm-hmm. Drew, what do you see as the lack of knowledge by the average person about water?
I think one of the biggest is that each sprinkler nozzle that a customer has in their landscape is equivalent to one shower head. So when customers are looking at their outdoor water use, if on average they probably have about 25 or more sprinkler heads, if they cut out a day of watering, they're cutting out 25 or 30 showers. And so when customers are looking to make decisions to improve their water efficiency, outdoors is really a key opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, they always say, well, it's going to cost a lot to put in a new system. But most of the time, if they went and did an audit of their own home, they'd find out that they got leaking pipes, cracked pipes, tilted nozzles, clogged nozzles. The programming is wrong on the controller and things of that sort. Also, you know, if they have a hill and you have all this water, when you turn the irrigation off, you have low head drainage issues that people don't realize that even though you shut the controller off and there's no water that they're pushing out, all the water in the lateral pipes are leaking. So that's another issue to deal with. Chris?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was reading the setup for the interview tonight, and something just struck me. I mean, really relative to Rob, what you and I say almost every week, right? And that is there's just more to water than just turning on your tap, right?
Right.
So everybody sees that. We use the phrase, hey, we want everybody to get involved and save water, but what does that really mean? And our job on the show has really been to bring some definition to that, help our listeners understand what it is they can really do, whether that listener is a homeowner or they're a water agency or they're a manufacturer or whatever. So kind of getting a little bit more deeper into that. Water doesn't necessarily cost a whole ton, a lot of money right now, and it's probably more valuable than what we as residents and businesses pay for that water. But what are some of the things that you guys are doing and thinking about to kind of motivate people, companies, agencies, to play their part in making water conservation actual a way of life? Lisa?
We're focusing on a lot of educational opportunities. I think we're becoming a much more data-driven community, society, and we're really trying to get access to people in terms of them learning. So I'm really pleased with your show and the opportunity to share, ideas like make sure you understand what the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's WaterSense label is. Look for those products. You'll see the logos all over your hardware store if you're looking on so many products. And you'll see them on toilets. You'll see them on shower heads. You'll see Energy Star clothes washers. That's automatic savings when you just change to and upgrade to more efficient fixtures. So that's really important, we think. And I'll let Drew touch on the outdoor opportunities that are available. And there's so much happening in the industry and really in terms of technology. We just want people to value water, to use what they need, to rid themselves of the waste. And that, we think, is the California conservation way of life, is look for the new opportunities.
We couldn't agree with you more for the WaterSense and the Energy Star rating. It is just, it's been a topic of ours over and over again, and I'm sure within the coming weeks we'll do it again, Rob. Drew, how about that? How about that same question? You have anything to chime in with?
Absolutely. We live in a world where just in the last few years, data is the most valuable resource on the planet, with companies like Google, Facebook, Netflix, and similar companies who make money off of collecting data and targeting ads. And we in the water industry, we collect a lot of valuable information that we can use to help customers and provide information and help engage them to make informed decisions. And that's something that at Moulton Nigga Water District, we really pride ourselves, and our board has been very supportive to engage the public with things like sending alerts to customers with smart meters, providing direct install programs for smart irrigation controllers to make it easy to put in a device that helps to adjust watering as the weather changes and it shuts off before it rains, to help provide kind of an adaptive smart home for water use. So I think the way that we help engage the public and help value water is to reach the public in the ways that they're used to seeing information, which is through all of these modern tools. And we have a lot of great information to help in tapping into that.
Yeah. I know I talked earlier on the show about our winner for the Extreme Water Makeover. We partnered with Municipal Water District of Orange County, and I know they sent out emails and letters to, I think it was 500,000 customers. And we did have a lot of people from your neck of the woods who entered into the contest, but unfortunately, we have to pick one to do that.
That was a tough job, by the way.
It was a very tough job, very, very tough job. And we got that done, and we were very excited. At least people now are becoming aware of it. They don't want to have the most ugliest landscape in the, some people go to the dramatic effort of turning off their water completely, and all the vegetation dies and their grass is bad, and they just leave it, and the rest of the neighbors don't like that. So by doing this Extreme Water Makeover, I mean, they're going to get a complete makeover with all new, brand new irrigation equipment, and have it done by somebody who's an irrigation auditor, Irrigation Association auditor come in and do that and then teach them how to use the system. I think that's going to be a big thing. Well, you guys, well, for your agency, Elisa doesn't offer rebates for products, but you guys do. And I know you were involved with the free sprinkler nozzle program a couple of years ago, and I think that's going to be ramping up again from what we hear. And I think you're still doing the rebates. They either get through you or through Metropolitan Water for yeah. the controllers. And I know we just went through a process at our company, which is Toro, with Chris on the spray bodies with the pressure regulation.
Right.
And so that's a new thing that has to happen. What I find odd is I'm on the committee for the National Association of Home Builders on the Water Efficiency Task Team. And I was surprised that they were willing to give out points for new built homes if the companies who makes controllers says, we have a smart controller, but it wasn't EPA WaterSense listed. And I objected to that. I thought, hey, all the real companies are going out and spending the money to get these things certified. And somebody, you know, Drew, you and I can sit together and design a controller and call it a smart controller, and we don't have to spend the money to get it accredited, yet they were going to give out points for that. And I felt that was kind of an odd thing for them to do. And I know they're pushing that towards a lot of different processes. But I don't know. We got to get real about this because without air, oxygen, and water and food, we're not going to be here anymore. So needs to happen.
Hey, Drew, so let me ask this question of you in relative terms, what Rob was talking about, the different programs and things like that. Right now, what does Moulton Nagel offer? Is there a current program?
Yes, we offer a wide portfolio of programs to help customers be efficient. We participate in Metropolitan's regional rebates and high efficiency nozzles, high efficiency clothes washers, high efficiency toilets. Turf removal and replacement with low water use plants. We also have direct install programs to help make it easy for customers with smart irrigation controllers, but also we've taken it one step further on turf removal with what we call NatureScape, where customers replace their turf with California native plants as a full-on watershed kind of project to help keep water on site. And provide watershed benefits. In South Orange County, there's a lot of potential benefit to keeping water on site and out of the local creeks and ocean. And so we've seen a lot of engagement in that type of project, and customers have taken a lot of pride in building that local habitat to support their water efficiency efforts.
Oh, good. Well, this one's a question I have for Lisa. Lisa, you sound like a lady who likes to go shopping, and, you know, it's getting to be holiday time here. So it's Black Friday next week, and could we make it Green Friday instead? Is there an opportunity to save dollars with water? And if you can talk about that. And also, you can tell us about your little venture you're going to do with Australia.
Oh, sure. Well, thankfully for my husband, I'm not a big shopper, but if I was, I do peruse all the hardware stores, and I definitely check out the smart controllers. There's just a lot of information online. I think people could really value looking through the online tools or talking to their, you know, water utility and staff, and trying to learn about where their water use is in their home, what improvements they could make, and then ask for a new, you know, water-efficient clothes washer if that's, you know, top of their list. Most people don't know that toilets often use the most water in the home, clothes washers second, shower heads third. The new clothes washers have really changed. They used to use, you know, 45 gallons, you know, per load back 15 years ago. Now, then they moved to about 30 less than 10 years ago. Now we're down under 15 gallons per load. So these products are really getting a lot more efficient and a lot more features in them too. You can save energy at the same time. There's a nice online survey tool from posted on the National Rural Water Association's website called the Savings Engine. You can look up, do simple water budget analysis for yourself in just a couple minutes and see where your opportunities are. And if you can focus on hot water savings too, and that also includes outdoor, because outdoor is on peak demand, particularly in the summer, and that's really expensive, energy-intensive water for the water utilities to provide. So I would definitely look for both water and energy savings together to create a green Friday for yourself.
Would you mind saying that? So, you know, the NRWA's like 6-minute water audit, I think, is what you're talking about, right?
Right, that's right. Right.
So that, so for our listeners, guys, you can go to www.nrwa.org/savings-engine. And anyone can do it. Just go to the website and spend about 6 minutes, and they'll give you, you'll get some, great answers.
Hey, Lisa.
I'll give you some tips.
Lisa, can you talk to my wife about not spending money shopping? I would appreciate that very much. She gets mad when I go spend my money on my hobbies, but she has her little things too. So
yeah,
you can just online like BaShop and then just not click buy.
Yeah.
So Drew, at your agency, what do you see as the biggest water users, and how are you guys addressing that, or how are you educating the your constituents on really the value of water? Do they really appreciate that? I mean, I would assume you're doing tiered rate billing as well.
Yes, we have individualized, customized water budget and climbing block rates. So each customer has an indoor and an outdoor budget, indicative of efficient water use for each household. And as they go over that, the rate increases, and so it provides a signal of inefficient water uses. Their bill goes up. And so that also then helps to fund all of our workshops, rebates, and water efficiency efforts to help support getting that water usage back in budget and efficient. That's I think really key. And we've really built a lot of workshops. We hold over 30 workshops a year for the public, from landscaping to irrigation workshops. We have over 1,000 people every year go through those. We also have about 400 HOAs in our service area, homeowners association. And we hold an annual workshop collaboratively with our neighboring water agencies to help engage, because in South Orange County, it's really outdoor water use. It's the number one use, and HOAs manage a lot of the major parkways and outdoor sites. And so engaging them and trying participating in all the offerings we have for turf removal and replacement with landscape, high efficiency landscapes, and really engaging them has been really helping support our water use over the years. We actually, in the past 12 months, have the lowest water use that we've had. Even in the last 30 years, we've doubled our population. And so coming out of the drought, to have our water use continue to go down is really a testament to all the great efforts from our customers.
Do you know what the per capita usage is per person?
Currently, it's about 100 gallons per person per day.
Okay. And do you see anywhere in the future on new builds, you see the city council looking towards introducing putting 2 meters at the home, one for the indoor and one for the landscape? Do you see that as a future thing?
I think it's probably cost prohibitive today, but what our board has supported is smart meters, providing that hourly data, and I'd say that with that kind of data, you can really segment and understand indoor versus outdoor water use and provide an equivalent level of information for the public without that additional cost.
Okay. So the meters that are put in, not only do the you get to see what the numbers are, but how does the customer do? Is it something they go out and look at, or is it something that ties into their PC?
They can see online.
Yeah, so with our smart meter technology, we've also have an online portal where customers can log in. They can also get an app on either the Android or Apple phone and get push notifications or email alerts if they have continuous flows. So instead of waiting for their next bill, they'll get an alert and be able to fix that leak before it potentially causes some damage to their home.
How many people are engaging in these programs, right? Particularly the ones where you're switching out turf for endemic or native plants. I mean, lots of people we talk to seem to think that, oh, native plants, you know, they're not as pretty as ornamentals and things like that. And I say, well, here, let me send you some pictures of some salvia and ceanothus and manzanita, and I'll change your mind in, you know.
Can you spell that, Chris?
Yes, I can, actually, as a matter of fact, and the genus and species names, if you want.
Okay.
Many years at Rancho Santa Ana Botanic Garden, so not stranger to that. Do you get much resistance, Drew, from your customers?
Not at all. We've had a great partnership with our customers. We actually had over 5 million square feet of turf removed from our customers over the past decade. And that actually reflects about a quarter of the turf removed in all of Orange County. And we have only 5% of the population. So providing these resources to customers, engaging with them, providing this kind of partnership with them so that they're aware, and building that awareness has really paid dividends for our district. On the California native plants, in fact, we've done this pilot program with Metropolitan Water District and about 20 agencies throughout LA and Orange County, and it's been a tremendous testament to the power of building that kind of a community. We've been working with the California Native Plant Society to build a brand around California native plants because they're, as you mentioned, there's that challenge with awareness and confusion with California-friendly plants. And I'll encourage the listeners to go to the CalScape website from the California Native Plant Society.
Right.
It's a great resource to look up native plants, and there's been a huge partnership with nurseries to help provide branding associated with native plants.
That's good. You work with Bill McDonald up at Metropolitan?
Absolutely.
Well, he's a good man. Lisa, I want to go back to one of the things I asked. I know we skipped over that. I pushed you to another question asking you to help my wife not spend money when she shops. But anyway, tell me about the Australia gig you guys got.
Well, our team's been working in Australia for decades now, actually, their previous drought. So they've been going, they had a 13-year drought, got really extreme. The town of Brisbane was down to less than 90 days supply. You know, they were kind of on the Cape Town track, and then the cyclone kind of ended up saving them. But they have they're very water efficient. You know, when you see gallons here, it's actually liters there, and you multiply almost by four here. So they're efficient with their supplies. They use more. And they're looking for us to review their conservation programs for Southeast Queensland, which is a province for them, much like our states here, which is in kind of their northeast of Australia. And that's kind of closer to the equator, right? They're flipped from us. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of progressing into drought. Same with New South Wales. You see them on fire right now if you're watching the news.
Yes.
Much like we're on fire here, that's really a result of our, you know, catchment areas with our forests just being really dry. And that's a direct effect of our climate change impacts we view. And so we're coming online to help them. They actually design up to level 6 droughts, and that'll be our next task, is to do a peer review, and they're doing some more modeling related to conservation opportunities, and in this case, addressing it for drought. But, you know, we work globally and year-round on an everyday savings for conservation. Conservation way of life is not just in times of drought. This is water efficiency is an everyday exercise, and we design conservation programs all throughout the country and around rebate programs, so helping to get staff like Drew's team more budget and staffing to run their conservation programs is our main effort, and we'll be doing that in Australia.
Do you have branch offices around the world since you're getting all these activities all over, or they just know you, how famous you guys are here in the States, and give you a call?
No, we're very fortunate to have so many partners. It's a huge network. Water efficiency in the industry in general, I think, feels like one big family. We've known Russell Beatty for 20, Bill and Russell started working together in 1993 and started the first spreadsheet that turned into the software that we continue to update, which is an end-use model. It's really robust. You know, we design small, scarce, communities with intense need for conservation, we do a new modeling for them, or we do it for big multi-million-dollar conservation programs and everything in between. So, but yeah, it's we're lucky. We have a global network of partners. So we.
As you were saying, Lisa, a little earlier in the show and describing that the company is very data-driven, do you have any data that you can share with our listeners comparatively to water use in the United States versus, you know, the rest of the globe?
I do, actually. We actually published it. We have an International Water Association book. If you really want to see things in metric, that would be our parallel or companion manual, in a way, written with international case studies, and we, let's see, Australia would be running about 200 to 300 liters per capita per day. That's the equivalent of about 700,000 liters here, and that's the, you know, 150 to 300 gallons per capita per day we see. Many are, and we're actually quite low after the drought here. In European, other places, you know, the land use is much more dense, and they have a lot less landscaping, and many utilities, when we work with them internationally, think we're quite honestly crazy to put potable drinking water on our outdoor landscape. Mm-hmm. That's really valuable water, and we're fortunate to have 24/7 water service in this country, and so the water use numbers, I mean, the World Health Organization, it's more like, you know, 25 gallons, 22 gallons per person per day that we really need for, like, our health and safety, you know, and domestic needs to cook and take care of our needs, our personal needs. So, it's just, yeah, we kind of, our quality of life is different here. Our water use is really different here in California and in the U.S. So, we really advocate that people use only what you need.
See, Chris, I told you having smart people on the show is going to give a lot of information. See, they're engineers, and I appreciate that. I'm an engineer too, so I appreciate. Mine's electronics and physics, so I appreciate you guys. And I have my old saying is, "In God we trust; all others bring data," because that's what drives me. I'm a data guy. I got to see that. So, just real quickly, is getting into the water business any jobs? Is that a good place to be for the future of people here? Either one of you.
Absolutely. I think that water is one of the big challenges we face in the 21st century, and there's a lot of changes. We built a lot of great infrastructure in the 20th century with this amazing network of aqueducts to get us water in Southern California, and now we need to figure out how to work with people to build partnerships with the community, and that takes a different skill set to work with data science and behavioral scientists, outreach, to engage the public in a partnership to be efficient.
Hey, Lisa, we're coming up to the NBC News Hour, so why don't you tell everybody where they can get more information, specifically about Nadaos, well, yeah, water management and jobs and things like that. How can they contact you or learn more about you?
We're online. We're at www, and our last name is MADDAUS Water. .com, and we have a new hire, a relatively new hire, Civic Park fellow. If you want to learn more, we can put you in touch with Hannah and our team. There's a lot of young talent coming in, and all ages, really. We advocate that you consider a job in water. In fact, there's many that are retiring and from their jobs and creating a second career in water. So
great.
We advocate you look at job boards, and yes. Connect with us. We'll link you up with a great water utility.
Great. Well, I want to, on behalf of the Water Zone, and Chris will say the same thing, we really appreciate you guys coming on
Absolutely.
The show.
Absolutely. Great.
Learned a lot of stuff, and hopefully you can come back and talk about some of your other things that you're doing, and anything that we can do for you guys on this end, we'd be glad to do it for you.
Yeah. Lisa and Drew, thanks for coming on.
Thanks. You have a good week. And to our wonderful listeners and viewers, because we're on video as well from NBC, most important thing we all have to do is
think blue. Good night,
good night,
everybody.
Good night. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
It's time for NBC Radio News on KCAA Loma Linda, brought to you by Green Kong Dispensary, the Inland Empire's finest curated medical and